This is a Federal News Network original podcast.
The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today we're going to be talking to Todd Gustafson, president of HP Federal, and Tommy Gardner, CTO of HP Federal. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. So before we start, HP Federal, Prospecta, what is HP Federal today?
So I've had the benefit, Sean, of being with HP for 32 years. Frankly, the only company I've ever worked for. And 80 years ago, Hewlett-Packard Company was started by Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard, right? And the first product they made was an audio oscilloscope for Walt Disney Company. And over those years, we've gone through lots of different transformations. We were a test and measurement company. We're a medical company. We're server, storage, PCs, printer company. And 4 years ago, the company made a decision to separate into two. And at the time, we separated into HP Inc., INC, and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. HP Inc. today makes printers, PCs, additive manufacturing, think digital manufacturing. And we separated Hewlett-Packard Enterprise into servers, storage, services. Once that separation happened 4 years ago, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise made a decision to split their services business apart to Hewlett-Packard Enterprise and DXC. Mm-hmm. And then DXC split off their federal business, which is now called Prospecta. So HP Federal and Prospecta are two totally different companies that compete in the same marketplace and supply different technology and services offerings depending upon the agency or the group we work with.
Okay, and how big is it today?
So HP Inc., which is what we report, is about a $60 billion company with about 50,000 people, and we do business in about 140 different countries across the globe.
Outstanding. And today we're going to talk about cybersecurity.
Sure.
And so, you know, what I was excited about this program was that you're in that many countries. You're seeing things from a broad spectrum, and you're seeing things across many sectors. And so as we jump into, you know, endpoint security, where is it today?
Tommy, you want to tackle that one?
Yeah. Endpoint security is, you know, part of your defense in depth, but it's the beginning point. It's the entry point into networks. And the design and the progress we've made over the years, the investments we're making day by day, is to improve that endpoint security in many different facets against the numerous threat vectors. And so the machines coming out today are better than they were last year, much better than they were 5 years ago. But the good news, Sean, is that the machines coming out next year are going to be even better still. There's a continuous investment and continuous improvement that has to go on. The reason is the threat's getting smarter, too.
So let's talk about that, because you say better, right? And I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think they're faster, they're cheaper, and there's a lot of things that go to that, but they're faster, right? So, and when you say better, I'm taking that as the internal components of those machines have gone through a process that makes them more secure than anything we threw out in the market 10 years ago.
Exactly.
But they're also faster. So there's an ability to compute and handle threats at a quicker pace as well if I'm a bad guy. So, you know, what does that investment need to look like in the future to make sure we stay ahead or at least stay at the same par with them?
So I think if I could take a step back, right, yeah. When you think about endpoint security, right, there was if we dial this back maybe 5 years ago, even 10 years ago, there was a lot of work, whether it was government agencies or corporations, and they wanted to put a fence around their environment.
Perimeter
right?
defense,
they,
it was.
That was the basic element about what security was all about, right? Protect bad actors from going in. But the reality is that you and I, from an engagement standpoint, want to get information and we want to push information.
Yeah.
And so as a result of that, you saw a lot of work happen around the operating system. So you saw, you know, Microsoft and Symantec and McAfee and all these other companies developing tools to get focused on purely the operating system. And so lots of good work that happened on the around the perimeter, if you will. Then you had lots of good work happening on the OS. But then there become other threat vectors that happen. And when we think about endpoint security, a lot of us will think about, whether it's their phone, their PC. We like to think about it as any endpoint device. So it could be your printer. It could be your manufacturing device that's connected to your network. And so what we're focused on is how do we think about three different levels of security below the operating system, mm-hmm. think BIOS, at the operating system, and then above the operating system. And we, as a result of our heritage as Hewlett-Packard Company, and we were in networking and servers and the cloud, mm-hmm. we have a lot of intellectual property that allowed us to be very nimble in terms of applying that intellectual property down to the PC level in ways that a lot of people weren't thinking about it.
I think that's a very easy way to look at the OSI model, right? I mean, you just broke the OSI model down into three layers, right? Below the OS and above the OS. And as an industry, though, are we looking at it that way? I mean, HP seems to have a pretty forward thinking of how you look at approaching this. But how do we approach, how do we get that to propagate amongst the entire industry so we're all thinking that way? Because if we don't, we're only going to be so good.
I'm going to do it two different ways. I'll answer first question, then I'm going to ask Tommy to spend maybe a minute longer on what's happening from an industry standard standpoint. So the vast majority of people have focused on the network and yep. focused on the operating system. But the reality is when you look at a device, whether it's a printer, a printer basically is just a PC that prints, right, mm-hmm. From that perspective. And one of the things that I like to do when I go in and visit somebody is I'll often take my my phone and I'll fire up the Wi-Fi and I'll see how many unsecure access points there actually are on the network. It's always amazing, and it's almost always printers as an example. But what we decided to do was we weren't going to be successful at the operating system level, right? That wasn't going to be a core competency. Other organizations and companies had invested there. But from a BIOS level, that became the next frontier for bad actors in terms of, you think about Stuxnet as an example. Mm-hmm, at mm-hmm. its core level, agreed. That was a BIOS level intrusion that happened. And there, even today, are still not tools available for people to adequately monitor that. So as an organization, we said, what can we do to make the most secure printers and PCs in the world? And at its core level, we thought about it from a built-in versus a bolt-on standpoint. So when we think about how do we develop products for this marketplace, it's built into the firmware in such a way that from a digital signature standpoint, it can't be infiltrated.
Okay.
Yeah, and the key in the standards is really, I think, focused in NIST. Now, there are ISO standards and other standards, and IEEE, but Dr. Walt Copeland has done a fascinating job in leading that organization to bring industry together with government and academia and setting cyber standards. And they have the authorities to make this mandatory into the federal government. And the different things they do for resiliency, for supply chain risk, and overall risk management is very impressive, and that's leading the design efforts for future machines.
Yeah. So, great segue. So, what does endpoint security for the office of the future look like? What is that going to look like?
Well,
that's a dream question for a CTO, isn't it?
Well, I am very interested in some of the technologies that are coming down the pike that are going to change the whole market. And they revolve around quantum information science. Now, that's a whole lecture in itself. But there are changes coming in quantum memory and quantum key distribution and the things that you can do in quantum communication or quantum networking that are really going to be done at the micro or atomic scale. And I think you will see things we're not even dreaming of in another 5 years in the office of the future. But what you're looking for is what are the end results or what are the outputs? And that's productivity. You know, how can we get better at what we do? How can we be smarter and make better decisions? And those are inputs that are come from both AI and data science working together.
But if I could add on to that, Sean, right? So if you think about the future, right? So that's kind of where we're going and where that technology is going to evolve. But there are real world applicability opportunities today with AI, right? Where we're using machine learning and artificial intelligence to look at algorithms that can impact endpoint devices in a way that we can provide real-time resiliency for devices and real-time recovery for devices without an operator even understanding what's happening.
Yeah, don't go too far on that. Let me go to break, and then I want to talk about that when you get back. My guests today are Todd Gustafson, president of HP Federal, and Tommy Gardner, CTO of HP Federal. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Network.
I'm Jared Serbu. Each week, our program on DoD features discussions with the military's top brass, with civilian executives, and defense thinkers on how the Pentagon operates. It's reliable information from the people making and executing policy. Tune in Wednesdays at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Federal News Network, or subscribe to On DoD on iTunes or Podcast One.
When we need help, we turn to government. When government needs help, they turn to Federal News Network.
Federal News Network.
For news on the federal pay raise.
To learn how other agencies handle IT modernization.
To see how Congress funds my agency.
For changes to my TRICARE benefits.
For the latest on my security clearance.
Federal News Network. Federal News Network. Helping feds meet their mission.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Network. My guests today are Todd Gustafson, president of HP Federal, and Tommy Gardner, CTO of HP Federal. Gentlemen, before we went on break, Todd, you were talking about AI. How far are we from AI?
We have it here today. Okay. Right? And, you know, when I mentioned a little bit earlier about below the OS, i.e. BIOS, right, and above the OS, AI is there today with tools that look at real-time malware, right, and provide that level of resiliency. And when you, and the devices that we provide into the marketplace today, those are built into their environments in such a way that you don't have to load it on and you're able to take advantage of it immediately without without ever thinking about it. If I think about my kids, right, I have three kids in college today, they don't think about security at all. And, and frankly, the majority of next generation that's entering the workforce, that's not on the top of the mind. So it's important for us as industry leaders and as IT experts to be able to think about the tools that we provide that level of security without a lot of thought process and the resiliency in such a way that they can self-repair.
Two examples of where it is today is one in predictive analytics, which is an AI formulation that looks at a data lake of information on printer failures and uses that to predict when your printer will fail, and depending on inputs and sensors that are in the printer. So you can replace a part before you're out of operation. So your operational availability stays up. Another example is using neural networks to try to predict when software comes in, whether it's malware or not. Is this good or it's bad? And we've made great progress in that field and being very successful in detecting new malware.
Privacy. I make the argument all the time is that for convenience, we're starting to give up privacy, right? I had the former White House privacy officer on the show. We had a great conversation about this. So is that based on, or the premise is based on what we know about the machine and the data that we have on machines like this have failed in this amount of time, so we predict this one will fail, or will be real-time transmission that the user has to allow. Like we do this all the time with our iPhones as we say, hey, will you allow this service?
Yes.
I've just started saying,
so
don't allow
everything.
It's an
opt-in approach versus, you know, if you don't do anything, we're going to collect the data. There's opt-in available. GDPR has set the tone, and when you're an international company, you've got to follow rules at the highest level, which GDPR sets a pretty high standard.
It does.
And so we follow the GDPR rules. In the technology sector at HP, we have merged our cyber affinity group, which is a collection of people all over the world that follow cyber and are knowledgeable in cyber, with our privacy affinity group. Because the things the cyber people are interested in are the same technologies the privacy people are interested in. And the dialogue between the two groups is fascinating.
It is fascinating. And are you saying, I've always wondered this, because we did a show on GDPR, but it was really early, right before its implementation. Are you seeing from the, maybe from the president's seat, are you seeing a bleed over from the international work to the work in the States, or is it two separate?
So I would say it a little bit differently, right?
Yeah.
What's interesting is that when I think about where the government was, in a lot of cases, they were potentially laggards from an IT perspective, right? And you had commercial organizations, global organizations ahead, government following. We frankly see it just the opposite, right? We see particularly the federal government leading out in a more significant manner, and then organizations following. And what I would say is, and I'll give you one simple example, is we talked about, you know, device security as an example. There's a whole burgeoning effort going around supply chain security, right? So we think about where our products are developed today, where they're built, the suppliers that are built into them. For companies to understand and government agencies to understand from the design of the product to the birth of it, if you will, the manufacturing of the product, transportation, installation, and eventually, recycling of those devices. What happens along the way? How do we leverage blockchain technology as a fundamental element of that? And, you know, it was just over a year ago where we saw the super micro bug that was out in the news. A lot of debate on whether that actually happened or not. Reality is, whether it happened or not, the possibility of it happening is very real. And so you see a lot of agencies. Social Security Administration was the kind of the leader in this globally, for that matter, in terms of helping to understand from a print perspective what was the vectors around supply chain security. And now you have states like California, Illinois as an example, and other Israel, et cetera, following what the U.S. government is doing in terms of applying that level of supply chain security into their procurement process.
No, agree. We just had GSA on, and that was one of the things they talked about was the supply chain and making sure that they could offer devices that were already vetted. And so that's a fascinating process because it's not just at the purchase. It's down with every firmware update and every update you have.
Total life cycle.
Yes. Yeah. And so one question I ask them, I'll ask you, is how does that information get shared? I mean, there's so much proprietary that must happen within your business, you know, to stay ahead and stay very profitable. But how do we share information so that people know what's going on? Like you said, the bug, Stuxnet, those kind of things. How do we get ahead of that?
Yeah, so I'll let Tommy follow up on it. But at its core level, the government, right, has done a really good job, I think, getting ahead of this because this is all going to be cloud-based. And they have FedRAMP, right, as that primary on-ramp, if you will, in terms of a level of certifications that's required of vendors that are going to take advantage of cloud and the privacy associated with that and use that on-ramp for FedRAMP as that baseline privacy and security. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing it as a device level, not at a data level, right? So those are two different things. Yep. So we're attacking it more not monitoring that data, but rather monitoring the device.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I was going to mention the DHS Task Force on Supply Chain Risk Management. It's for the IT and communication sectors, 60 people, voting members,
yep.
20 from comms, 20 from IT, and 20 from all over the federal government. And working on this issue, I co-chair the threat evaluation group, but there is an inventory group, working group, that is doing exactly what you were asking. They're trying to collect, how do you do this? Let's share best practices. And companies are opening up. And to some degree, we're not going to share who our suppliers are because mm-hmm. that gets to proprietary information and it enhances our competitive ability.
Agreed.
But the practices are very similar. And we're learning from other companies what they do, and they're learning from us. And I think that's the way the government should handle this, is let's work together in things that that everybody benefits from. And then with your suppliers, you've got to work on a basis of trust. And if you have a supply network that you don't trust the people that are working for you, it's doomed to failure sooner or later.
All right. Hold that thought. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. My guests today are Todd Gustafson, President of HP Federal, and Tommy Gardner, CTO of HP Federal. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Network.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Jeff Olson. Walking pneumonia is caused by bacteria that can have you down but not out.
Usually people with this infection are well enough to kind of be up and about, even though they have an infection going on at the time.
Pediatric infectious diseases specialist Dr. Napuni Rajapakse says walking pneumonia is a lung tissue infection, spread in part through the droplets of coughs and sneezes. Symptoms include a fever, cough, and sore throat, sometimes combined with difficulty breathing caused by shortness of breath and chest pain.
If you think you might have walking pneumonia or any type of pneumonia, it's a good idea to see your care provider.
If a physical examination is inconclusive, Dr. Rajapakse says your healthcare provider may order a chest x-ray.
It's helpful to get a picture of the lungs to see whether there's any area of infection that's visible.
Dr. Rajapakse says most people can recover from walking pneumonia without medication. However,
the symptoms are very severe. Your doctor may prescribe an antibiotic to treat it.
For more information, talk with your healthcare provider or visit mayoclinic.org.
Federal News Radio is now Federal News Network. We're the news organization of record for the federal community. Our mission is helping you meet your mission. Federal News Network.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Network. My guests today are Todd Gustafson, president of HP Federal, and Tommy Gardner, CTO of HP Federal. Gentlemen, before we went on break, we were having a really good conversation about different things as it related to services. But what about the small agencies? You know, you have these agencies that have very small budgets. They have some highly capable staff, but then they have some staff that have been there for years and haven't been able to grow. How is HP Federal attacking or helping small agencies?
So, Sean, what I think you see starting to happen, and if you think about the analogy of the cloud for a minute, right? The organizations decided their ability to manage their own data center versus having someone like Microsoft or AWS or Google go out and do that for them. Much better value in terms of the financial efficiency of that value, but more importantly, the security offerings, access to data. Well, the same thing is happening across the globe. At HP, we've seen it first in our printer fleets, right? Organizations say, hey, listen, this managing printers is not a core competency for us. And given that HP, we wake up every day thinking about printers and PCs, it is a core competency for us. So how do we manage that? And we call that basically as a service. That same exact where you see the government today, 60 to 70% of the printer fleets are managed outside of their own organizations. That same thing is happening today with devices. And as your organizations flex, right, what you basically want to do is have a subscription-like service so that you pay, you know, basically set up personas, good, better, best, depending upon what the individual requirements are from a consumption standpoint, and then you rely upon a company like HP to go out and provide that service to you in a way that can let you focus on your mission, particularly as a small government agency, and we can provide you best-in-class delivery and allowing you the ability to flex up or down within that environment.
A few years ago, a Navy veteran, NMCI came out. Great concept. I agree with it. Wholeheartedly come in, streamline the network, desktops, everything. They owned A to Z. They struggled a little bit with the implementation of it. Have we gotten better with that? Have we gotten to a place now where we can get in the disruptions to the staff? Because I think that's why people get scared. They get worried. Do they really have it down nowadays to really do this? Because it's down to the level of service, right? The IT consumerization, or I call it the Amazon effect. Everybody wants to be able to do everything at a push button on their phone. Are we there yet?
So I don't think we've crossed entirely that chasm, but yeah. If I go back to the analogy on the cloud, right, I think we would all agree that cloud is mature at this
Absolutely.
Point, right?
Yep.
And managed print is mature. As a service at a device level, I would say is 80% mature. And it really depends upon what you're willing to give up and what you want to go manage. So your mileage varies with that. But you mentioned NMCI, right? The Navy just they decided that they were going to split basically NMCI into two awards, right? Data Center Networking Award and Device Award, right? The Device Award was NGEN. HP was actually fortunate to get that award.
Oh, congratulations.
Just 2 weeks ago, 9-year, $1.4 billion contract. At its core level, what the NGEN Award is as a service for their devices. And they've agreed it. And now you have other agencies like the Army and the Air Force, particularly DOD, really leaning in on as a service because what they're discovering is that they have a limited workforce they can go and leverage from a headcount standpoint. And they want to pivot those folks to focus on the mission and let industry help them with their devices and their IT.
You know, earlier we talked about cybersecurity. And for a while there, the commercial sector was way ahead of government. And now government's more leading is the word. How do we get to a place, and our big companies like yours and the other big and some of the big system integrators, the key to getting the commercial sector and the government sector closer to each other? So there isn't one leading, but they're working together to make us more secure.
Yeah, I think you find a lot of the conferences that the Black Hats, the DEF CON, the B-Sides, which are really looking at what's going on out in the attacker space. And government's there, industry's there. There's a lot of collaboration between the two. You see a lot of professional societies that are focused in this area, from AFCEA and IEEE, that will bring in the best and the brightest to talk and debate and coalesce. And that's where a lot of the interface is going, is taking on the idea, sharing what is being found in the labs, and you got to have academia in there. And so relationships with strong academic institutions that are focused in the cyber area. And I know Carnegie Mellon is known as one of the best. They're very engaged with industry and what DOD is doing in the CMMC, or the Capability Maturity Model certification that's being pushed and will be rolled out here in the next year. That's the direction that's going to force collaboration.
I think there's a generational shift going on here,
well,
too,
right? Well, you mentioned earlier, I was going to ask, you know.
You know, if we think about what happens to us any given day, I've got my phone in front of me, right? There, the access to information, right, we would all agree, is there for everybody, right? It's what you do with that information. And I think from a generational standpoint, there's much more of a willingness, right, to drive a stronger level of collaboration that goes across all boundaries. It used to be that there was these artificial boundaries set up between DOD and intelligence and civilian, and someone would win and the other one would lose. And what we're seeing, right, is that this rising tide, if you will, the old JFK phrase, there's this rising tide that a new generation is helping lift all boats.
Is that generation also requiring a bigger level of access? Are we ready for that level of access to give them? Because they are. You opened the door, by the way.
Yeah. I think I do think it is an element that we're not fully prepared for. I think there's an element that we're all building toward, but it's a we're going to evolve, right? We're going to get there, and it keeps us all waking up every day and with challenges in front of us.
And the multi-factor authentication is improving, and the research is going on that way, whereas multiple factors, not just one or two, is going to give you an assurance that when you think you're talking to Joe or Bill or Sue, that's really who they are on the line, that they're not being spoofed or somebody pretending to be. That's going to help with the privacy issue and some I'll share with who I want to share with, and I'll have layers of people that I'll tell certain things. Other people, they're not allowed in my space.
Well, and that's where AI and quantum are going to fill those gaps, right?
Yeah, I agree.
That aren't there today.
I agree. Well, we could definitely talk for a lot longer. I appreciate the robust conversation today. My guests today have been Todd Gustafson, president of HP Federal, and Tommy Gardner, CTO of HP Federal. I am Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly. We will see you next month.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.
Follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Find us on Podcast One. Like us on Facebook. Our mission is helping you meet your mission. Federal News Network.